Well, he started off ingeniously when he put Radio Nova on the air. First of all, he was far more professional in RTE. The equipment was far better than RTE. His transmitter, his sound. He went for FM. He went for a clear channel. He started off with clutter-free music. So he had no ads, and he got people hooked. It was like a drug, and they loved it. And then he started with the ads, and he had the listenership, so the ads be able to flow in. And he literally ran out of space. There was no more time on his schedule on Radio Nova to put the ads in that he was getting in. So he set up Kiss FM, a more rockier station. He was out there looking at, again, part of his genesis for Radio Nova came from looking at radio in Los Angeles. And you could see the stations in Los Angeles had sister stations. So you had a middle-of-the-road station, which was, we'll say, Radio Nova, and a more rockier station, which was Kiss FM. So he had the two stations going. So he was able to spread his advertised out and, of course, take in more money, which was the basis of any good commercial radio station. He kept it going almost as long as he could. Kiss struggled, perhaps during the raids, and it was harder for him to put it back on the air. But Kiss was highly successful in a different demographic, and he'd done very well with it. He branched out in all kinds of directions. He tried Nova Television, which was pirate television. Again, the government not too happy with that idea, with looking at the success of Radio Nova. He tried Export Radio, which was basically Radio Exidy. Ireland had a long-wave frequency 252. And he decided he would try to broadcast into Britain. His issue was partly with Radio Nova, because the strength of his signal, he had his own advertising office in Liverpool, so he was getting British advertising because the strength of the signal was so good. He was getting across the across the Irish Sea. But he went from broadcasting to Dublin to broadcasting from Dublin. And this caused a major problem for the Irish government, because they were getting pressure from the British government that they didn't want this, like another Radio Luxembourg, broadcasting into Britain, and therefore they didn't want to be losing advertising. Radio stations in around Liverpool and Manchester were complaining about Radio Nova. The British government, British Postmaster General, put pressure on the Irish government to stop this. That's part of one of the set of raids on Radio Nova happened. And the minute the raid was over and he went back on the air, he went back to broadcasting to Dublin.
His wings were clipped,
yeah. And it was pressure, it was political pressure from the British government, from the Postmaster General in London, to put pressure on the Irish government to stop Nova doing this. So he went back to his signal, it was still strong enough. But he did try long wave, using the frequency allocated by the European Telecommunications. We had 252. He did try. He put in there, again, very expensive to put long wave on. He had his plans to set up in Mosny, his aerial down in Mosny. He did a couple of test transmissions. The great and late Tony Allen doing some test transmission on Radio Exidy. But it didn't really take off. Again, government pressure on this. Government wanted to protect their frequency more than anything else, which was 252, which, of course, they did later use in the joint venture between RTL, Radio Luxembourg, and RTE, which was Atlantic 252, which went on the air in 89.
And, of course, 252 is still in use today. And you have reference as well on your blog to even shortwave transmissions being undertaken by Radio Nova. Did that last for a long time? Was he really trying to go worldwide again in the pre-internet era?
No, not really. I think he just happened to come across a shortwave transmitter, wanted to see what he could do. He really had got Radio Nova to a point where he had to expand. So he had to try and expand it whatever way he could, whether it was to television or export radio. He was trying to expand his power over radio. And like, it's just, at the time in the 70s, shortwave was very popular, especially in pirate radio. So you're talking about 81, 82. Shortwave is still very popular. So he thought perhaps he could tap into that market. But it wasn't. Shortwave became more for enthusiasts rather than and purists rather than the commercial success.
Did he ever, do you think, seriously consider a national Irish station, or was he more interested in broadcasting from Dublin, as he said, to the East Coast and across to Britain, to the UK market?
I think Chris Carey felt that because Dublin was the big market, again, one of the next cities to Dublin was Liverpool. So rather than going to Galway, where you wouldn't get the brand advertisers, you'd be looking for the local butcher. He was going the opposite direction across the Irish Sea. I'd say Chris Carey always had hoped to go national. He even applied for the national radio licence in 89 and was turned down, which I felt he was badly treated, I think, by the commission. His prior days, he probably maybe too brash for them. I remember being there and they had a bit of a giggle at him when they said that his contribution to the Irish language, we would have a word of the day. I kind of, they had a laugh that wasn't really being Irish. And yeah, we kind of have Today FM just barely given a little bit of Irish with cred no crede.
Exactly, there's not very much of that. So to look at then at the jamming issue, that was an important political issue in the early 80s as well. I think there was jamming in 1982, and certainly again in 1984 it really took off and seemed to have some sort of serious political implications at the time.
The jamming of Radio Nova, Radio Nova was located in Herbert Street, 19 Herbert Street, and he had a link transmitter, microwave link transmitter up to the Dublin Mountains. And along that line was what used to be the old RTE Radio Museum in Rathmines. And they managed to put in a transmitter in there, RTE, to jam Nova signal. Now, it didn't have the political go-ahead to do that. RTE done it off their own back. I think they got a little bit annoyed at the government's lack of activity to try and put the... Radio Nova was putting some really serious dents into their listenership and therefore their advertising, and they wanted it to be stopped. Jobs were on the line at RTE, and the only way that they could see to stop it was to start jamming the signal. Now, it was easy enough to identify for Chris Carey, and of course he hit front page newspapers. He's standing outside the RTE place up in Rathmines with his aerial showing that this is where he was being jammed from. They weren't the only ones to be jammed, of course. Sunshine Radio was jammed as well. Famous Robbie Robinson, Robbie Dale, was on the air, and his signal was going in and out, fading in and out, and he was saying it was the jamming from RTE. It seemed to be a localised effort by RTE to try and put Radio Nova and the Super Pirates off the air, in Dublin especially, because Dublin was the major catchment area.
But it did backfire somewhat, didn't it, in that it brought people out onto the streets, literally, listeners who were angered by this.
It did brought people out on the streets, and also it angered the government, because they didn't give any sanction to RTE to do this. And not alone, it had a negative effect of giving massive publicity to Radio Nova. He was suddenly front page news. The jamming transmitters were turned off. But again, it was the start of the decline. I think Chris Carey got annoyed at the interference. He thought he would be left alone, and every little thing that they were doing was chipping away at his, perhaps at his ego, certainly at his ability to maintain Radio Nova at the strength it was at the time.
And of course, there was a very protracted and very bitter labour dispute at Nova as well, involving the National Union of Journalists, which certainly would have brought further negative publicity, and I think also dented advertising, in that the NUJ was encouraging larger companies not to advertise with Nova anymore.
That's true. In fairness, while it was a very protracted dispute and probably hastened the end of Radio Nova in the mid to late 80s, 86, Nova closed. You must remember, at all of this, Radio Nova is a pirate radio station. He doesn't have to recognise the NUJ, but he was so successful that he did. He tried to be as legal as possible. But unfortunately, his... charismatic nature ruffled a few feathers, especially among his staff. And like when the likes of Jenny McGiver and Ken Hammond went out on strike, it meant that union pressure was now coming on Radio Nova, and that, of course, being so many NUJ members at RTE, it seemed natural that that was another way for RTE through the NUJ to try and get Nova perhaps not closed, but certainly to, as you say, clip their wings.
And, of course, Nova did go off the air in 86, but it didn't really go away, because it came back almost straight away under another guise, or so it seemed to many people at the time.
The problem was Carey was in financial difficulty. Well, he wasn't in financial difficulty. The overseeing company on Radio Nova was in financial difficulty, and Carey wasn't willing to lose any money. The pressure was coming on from all quarters. They had been raided in 83. He had difficulties. His transmitters were causing him difficulties. Again, the market was fragmenting. There was more and more super pirates. There was Q102. There was Radio Leinster. There was different pirates coming on the air. So he was coming under immense pressure. And Kerry was not a man to kind of... He liked to get things going and then move on to the next project. And he probably spent longer at Radio Nova than many of his other projects. So Nova went off the air. Receivers were called in, and almost immediately Zoom went on the air with a brand new set of jingles and same staff, same studios.
Same frequencies,
just happened to be. Limped along trying to coattail on the success. Brian McKenzie and Tony McKenzie were there, but it didn't have the same appeal. People had loved Nova when it started because it was new and fresh. There was now newer and fresher stations out there. And, you know, it was coming towards the end of the pirate era, and people knew it was coming to the end of the pirate era. There was a lot more political will to bring in a more legalised, stable foundation for radio in Ireland. Hence, in 1987, the new legislation became a white paper, and by 88 it had passed into law.
But it didn't finish off Chris Carey entirely in Ireland, or perhaps indirectly, because he began a satellite radio station from the UK, which was picked up and rebroadcast by several stations in Ireland, as far as I know. So there was still a Radio Nova of some sort of a type was still available in Ireland.
Oh yeah, he set up Radio Nova on satellite, and again, as you say, it was rebroadcast. A lot of stations used it at night to cover their midnight hours. Liberty's local radio used to broadcast Radio Nova, and you kind of pined, you missed when you heard the quality of it. You missed the Radio Nova. Like, he had some big name DJs, like the likes of Tony Blackburn was broadcasting on Radio Nova for satellite. But unfortunately, Radio Nova satellite, while it was a very good station, it didn't get any advertising, and therefore, you know, if it wasn't making money, it wasn't for Chris Carey.
Because he was relying on FM relays, essentially. The original satellite broadcast couldn't be widely received by anybody at that time, I suppose.
No, and it wasn't. He wasn't just aiming at Ireland. He was hoping that he could be rebroadcast across Europe. It wasn't just aimed at Ireland. It was grand. The name was still there, but he wanted to be in some stations in Britain and then in Holland and France. But it never took off.
And finally, Eddie, just to conclude, why does all this matter? I mean, we've a very charismatic figure leading this radio station for years in Ireland, but for listeners, contemporary listeners who maybe never heard Nova or too young to have heard it, why is this important for radio history, this story?
It's important for a couple of reasons. First of all, this year is the 10th anniversary of Chris Carey's passing. He meant more to Irish radio than many, many people. He revolutionised Irish radio. To what you listen today, you can trace it back to Chris Carey and Robbie Robinson, who both men sat in a pub in Dublin and decided on radio, well, originally Sunshine and then Radio Nova. It goes back to Carey and Robinson were both pirate DJs on Radio Caroline. Their initial idea was they bought a ship, had it in Waterford Harbour to kit it out to go back on land, on the sea. Chris Carey didn't want to go back on the sea anymore. So they sat in a Dublin pub, were listening to radio stations and wondering how they were getting away with it, investigated more. Initially, Sunshine Radio was their idea, but the two men differed, and Chris Carey got a little bit of cold feet when the aerial for Sunshine was blown up by another well-known pirate operator, now deceased, who took great delight in telling me at the time that he was after planting a stick of dynamite at the foot of the mast. He got a bit of cold feet, but then he saw what Robbie Robinson done with Sunshine. Sunshine was on the air first, and he thought that while Robbie Robinson thought of a Dublin station and a community-based station, Chris Carey saw a chance, an opportunity to make a commercial success. And Radio Nova came in with a really powerful transmitter. He eventually went up to 50 kilowatts of a transmitter, massive transmitter. When you think that when 2RN went to Radio Athlone, it was only a 10 kilowatt transmitter. So this is state-of-the-art stuff, which RTE couldn't even compete with. In fairness to Chris Carey, he put over... At the time in 1980, over £150,000 into punts, as it was, into Radio Nova to get it on the air, and did make a success of it. He probably pushed the government a little bit too hard, but his contribution to the social history of Ireland, it paved the way for everybody else. you know, whereas the Pirates, like the Radio Nova, Radio Dublins and ARDs and Big Ds, were the crawling stages. Then we were walking. Radio Nova was the run. That was the run throughout the 1980s. And his contribution is, you just can't quantify it. A massive contribution. Not everybody got on with him. He could be quite abrasive. He could be quite brash. But he certainly made a commercial success of Radio Nova. And I think we owe him a debt of thanks. I think he's been laughed at by many people, especially in the upper echelons of the department and government and then RTE. But without Chris Carey, radio would not be as vibrant today as it is.